Hey, all you party people.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's Paige.
And Pixel.
And this is Paige and Pixel.
I hate you. Please tell me you have more of an opening anecdote than this.
So, fun story. I was a super adult on Easter.
Yeah.
And I changed the battery in my car.
Whoa.
From the internet instructions.
You're amazing.
Yeah. No big deal, but I just feel like that makes me pretty awesome, it right? Does.
I think so.
And I didn't blow up. My car didn't blow up. I drove it all day today.
Nice.
Everything seems okay.
You know what?
Thank you.
That's what you deserve.
I just really need someone to be proud of me.
I am proud of you. I'm proud of you. So we have a game episode.
Yeah. Today,
and I really need you to believe me when I say that I wanted to wait longer to talk about the subject of today's episode. I wanted to like spread out the survival horror games and save some of my big favorites for when we've got a little more like experience under our belts. But like what with the release of that absolute travesty of a film adaptation a few months ago, which I will not be talking about again. Because it doesn't deserve the life force that it would take to do so. What with that and my lack of self-control in general, I can't make myself wait any longer. I need to get this out of my system. Today, friends and neighbors, we are going to be talking about my third favorite game of all time, Silent Hill 2.
Yeah! Woo!
This is going to be a two-part episode. Because there is just so much ground to cover here, and I really want to do the story justice. Like, this is my third favorite video game for personal reasons. The game in the number two slot is there because I have a huge actual real-life crush on the protagonist. And the game in the first place slot is there because I have daddy issues, and the protagonist of that game is my real father. But I genuinely think, in an objective sense, and in a sense of storytelling and impact, and how it handles its subject matter, I think this is the best video game there is.
Like, for sure.
Mm-hmm. This game is high. Listen, you'll be a believer by the end of part two.
I'm a believer.
This game is high art, and I want to give it the time and the attention that it deserves. So yeah, two parts. Also, typically, what we do is we give a plot overview, and then we tell you about favorite moments and frustrating moments, etc. after the fact. But I really don't want to break the flow of the narrative with this one, so I'm going to tell you when those moments are, like, as they happen.
Got it.
In the midst
got
of
it, got it, got it.
Plot.
Okay, so we're just going to go through the plot.
Yeah.
And you're going to make your observations.
Like, hey, this is my favorite.
It.
This part was really hard. And then after that, we'll talk about who I had a crush on, game mechanics, rating, okay. Etc.
Got it.
Are you ready for this?
I sure hope so.
So Silent Hill 2 was developed by Bloober Team. And produced by Konami, just like all the other Silent Hill games. I explained the Silent Hill universe in our second episode, which is about Silent Hill F. So if you missed that one, maybe take a pause and go back and give that one a listen. If you can stomach the poor sound quality, I'm so sorry.
That makes those numbers from what I, looking at our first episode, that makes it even more impressive that people are suffering through that poor sound quality.
Fighting over one microphone.
Yeah.
Anyway, the original Silent the original Silent Hill 2 game, it came out in 2001, and it was remade in 2024. So this episode is focusing mainly on the remake. I think the original is a masterpiece. I have nothing negative to say about the original that can't be summed up by, like, technological limitations of the time.
Right.
And the fact that localization was not given nearly as much money and effort as it is. Do you know? When I say localization, do you know?
Okay. Not a clue.
So that is the process of translating a game.
What do you mean?
So Konami is a Japanese game company.
Oh.
And the games were originally written and voice acted in Japanese. The American version of Japanese games at that time would literally, like, pull tourists into their studio off the street and have them, like, cold read poorly translated lines. So the voice acting for original Silent Hill 2 is whack as fuck.
That's fantastic.
it kind of works because the game is supposed to be like uncanny and unsettling and weird, but like it's still whack. And the voice cast for the remake is incredible.
How much do these games cost?
Oh god. So, so much money. Like,
I want to play these games, but I don't have the money
to make.
Oh, no. For me to buy it and play a game.
I think probably Silent 2 Remake at this point, probably get it for 50 or 60 bucks.
Oh my god, that's so much.
It might be less now because it's been out a while. I think it's worth it.
I mean, I'm sure it is. I just literally don't have that kind of money right now for a video game.
Yeah.
For groceries, maybe, but.
I totally hear that. We spend money on video games that we could spend elsewhere because
I spend plenty of money on books that I could definitely be spending elsewhere. So
your thing, and this is our little thing as a household. But yeah, the remake has the benefit of all the technological innovations over the past 25 years, and those things make like moving and combat and immersion easier.
So this remake, is it literally the exact same game, just with updated technology?
So something like that is called a remaster.
Okay.
This, it is expanded. There's a few things that are a little bit different, but it is completely faithful to the story and the message.
So when people are saying Silent Hill 2 is the best, are they talking about the original Silent Hill 2 or are they talking about the Silent Hill 2 remake?
I would say the most people who are putting a lot of energy talking about Silent Hill 2 are talking about the original.
Okay. Because
it was such a landmark. But
as far as like the story and stuff though,
is the same. And also like there's this kind of like elitism that happens with old school gamers that are like, original Silent Hill 2 is really hard.
Gotcha.
And it's hard. Mostly for reasons that have been solved by technology. Like, it's not hard in a way that makes it more immersive or better. It's just hard because we couldn't do as much.
Right.
With
video game technology was more primitive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But this game, like, it's expanded some sections. It's added more. It's a longer game. It's added more gameplay. The main character is hotter now. and they've also
the important things.
Right. Exactly. One change that they added to the remake is they've added these little hints and indications throughout the game that the action we are experiencing here is not the first time the events of this game have happened.
It's like meta.
Yes, it's more like the main character has been caught in a loop for the past 25 years between OG and now. So it makes it feel less like a remake and more like a similar but different like turn of the wheel.
Gotcha.
We're doing the loop again because we still haven't managed to find our way out of the loop. So the remake has a ton going for it. And if you're a purist who is going to be mad and hate on any remake for the crime of not being the original, I want you to do something for me.
I want you to stand up. I want you to go to the nearest purveyor of succulents and buy the pointiest cactus you can find. If you already have a pointy cactus at home, you can skip this step. I want you to come back home. I want you to drop your pants. I want you to take that cactus and shove it up your urethra, you elitist piece of shit.
Holy cow, that was way too long.
I should also say before we get rolling too far that this game delves into some extremely difficult topics, including sexual assault, incest, murder, suicide. This game wanders down some very dark hallways, literally and figuratively. So viewer discretion is advised on this one. So now that we got that out of the way, let's rock this bitch. In my restless dreams, I see that town. Silent Hill. You promised me you'd take me there again someday, but you never did. Well, I'm alone there now, in our special place, waiting for you. Waiting for you to come to see me. But you never do. Thus opens Silent Hill 2 with a letter to our main playable character, James Sunderland, from his wife, Mary. Trouble is, Mary has been dead for 3 years. But still, drawn in by this letter, James comes to Silent Hill to try and find her. The game begins with James parking his car at an overlook rest stop above the town of Silent Hill, getting out and making his way on foot down into the town. and it is immediately obvious that something is very wrong here. There is a dense fog, chasms have opened up on the road, and in other places there are these random walls covered in white sheets built right across the road, making it impossible for James to leave other than by the way that he came. And there's hardly anyone else here, except for monsters, bugs, and a handful of other characters that seem to be just as lost and confused as James is. The first of these other characters you meet is a woman named Angela, who you see wandering around a cemetery on the edge of town. She, too, is looking for someone, in this case, her mother. But unable to help each other, unable really, it seems, to even fully reckon with each other's existence, you and Angela go your separate ways. For now. So James keeps going and winds up in downtown Silent Hill. And things are rough. Every single business is abandoned and run down. There's creepy notes and graffiti everywhere. So you're wandering around the streets of Silent Hill when you encounter the first monster. Now, the monsters and the symbolism behind them are Silent Hill's big claim to fame. So I'm going to introduce each monster and their symbolism in, like, order of appearance.
Okay.
So the monster we meet first in downtown Silent Hill is called the Lying Figure.
Is it Pyramid Head?
No, Pyramid Head is called Pyramid Head. This is called the Lying Figure.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I thought maybe that was like a nickname that the fandom gave him.
They're all fandom nicknames, I think. I might be wrong about that.
Okay.
So the Lying Figure is a woman who has this like tight cloth stretched over her upper body. So you can't see her face. She can't move her arms. Kind of like a straitjacket, but it covers her whole head, weird, too. And she can like run at you or slither along on the ground and headbutt you. She pukes up this awful black acid gunk that burns if it touches you. But they're also kind of sexy, too. Which is definitely a thing in this game. Monsters that are scary and sexy and maybe are even scarier because they're sexy.
Weird. Okay.
And the reason is that James and his libido, they be fighting sometimes.
Oh!
So the Lying Figure is symbolic of sickness.
Okay.
You lose your identity. You don't have a face. Your movement is restricted. You have the vomit that affects everyone around you, not just you.
Uh-huh.
So,
yep.
Keep in mind, James' first monster is a sick, hot woman.
Great.
The next monster you find are bugs with person faces. I don't know what they're about. I don't know what they symbolize. I do not love them. They're very easy to kill, though.
Okay.
Whatever.
Well, that's good at least.
So eventually you make your way to an apartment building. Oh, so there are like four big locations that you explore in this game, like different levels.
Okay.
And they have like little interludes between them where you're back in the town. But you have the apartments, then the hospital, then the prison, and then the hotel.
Okay.
Each location has like one long form puzzle that you have to solve to get out of it.
Okay.
Like, you got to find pieces that go to this puzzle locking mechanism, then you got to solve a riddle to figure out how to arrange the pieces, that kind of a thing.
Oh, cool.
The puzzles in this game are great. They're very well thought out. They're very interesting.
I love puzzles like
this
that.
This game would fuck you up, Paige.
I know.
I don't think you could. I really, like, I don't think you can handle this truly as a friend.
No, I understand that. I think that's just what's frustrating is because, like, I just really like those puzzles, you know?
I'm sorry. There's got to be games that have really good puzzles that aren't frightening.
If you know non-scary games that have puzzles like that, that are, like, really good and, you know, whatever, please tell me what they are because I would like to play them.
Yeah. So, you solve these long-form puzzles. You explore to get out. You encounter other smaller puzzles in service of figuring out the one big puzzle. And then you run into monsters and you learn a bit more about Silent Hill and why you are there and why others are there. So, in the apartments, the next monster type you encounter are the mannequins.
Ooh.
Mannequins are, it's kind of like if two mannequins were cut in half and the bottom half of both of them was welded back together at the waist. So it creates this being that's like, it's got no head. It's a mirror image top to bottom. There's also no feet. It's just got stumps. They're almost naked, except like there's some bands of cloth. And like, they don't have any genitalia, but they do look like they have skin. They're creepy.
Ooh.
And the way they move is even creepier. They move like spiders. They rear up with our top legs like spiders do, like that to be threatening kind of a thing. They sound like spiders. They make that like chittery,
ew,
vibrating sound.
Why?
Because it's a horror game, Paige.
I know, but like that all just seems like a lot.
It's
to
a lot
come up with.
They move so fast. Later on in the game, they like learn how to crawl on the walls and the ceiling too, as if that wasn't enough. And the thing that gets me about them is like they will be hiding perfectly still in a room, and like you'll either catch them out of the corner of your eye or they'll come at you out of nowhere. Which like this was the scariest part of the game for me. Like this was the thing that got me so many times. These stupid fucking mannequins just jumping out and kicking me in the face with their arm legs. They're the worst. But again, there's this uncanny sexiness to them, which is true of almost all of the monsters. They are simultaneously this like exaggerated male fantasy woman with two vaginas and no personality to bum you out, but they're also frightening. So we see this theme starting to emerge that we'll delve into deeper as the game progresses, that whatever is up with James, it's a sex thing.
Right.
James is experiencing these sexual desires, but also feels immense guilt for experiencing them, which is like why they manifest as monsters. What exactly those desires consist of and why they're such a problem for him will become clearer as the game progresses. But for now, suffice it to say that James is horny and hates himself for it. Hashtag me in high school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Next, we meet another human character named Laura. She is a little girl, she's 8 years old, and she's an asshole.
Aren't they all?
The first thing she does is, like, kick a key out of reach of James, like, through a grate, so that he can't get it to get out.
Oh, all right.
For the first three quarters of the game, she just shows up to give James shit and then runs away. So she's here now. We'll learn more about Laura later. Not long after that, we have our first interaction with...
Pyramid Head!
Yes.
Oh my god, I'm so excited for Pyramid Head.
Pyramid Head is one of the most famous things from the game. Like, people know Pyramid Head from memes who have never played the game. Like you,
like
obviously.
Like me, obviously.
Pyramid Head gets a lot of play at, like, different cons, gets a lot of cosplayers. Male theme, everyone loves Pyramid Head. Pyramid Head is exactly what he sounds like. A hot, shirtless guy with a giant metal pyramid over his head and a huge fuck you sword. And Pyramid Head is James.
Pyramid Head for president?
No, dear.
I mean, it's got to be better than what we got now.
Yes, agreed. But so Pyramid Head and James are one and the same, kind of. Like,
okay.
They're the same body, so like the same character model.
Okay.
But Pyramid Head is specifically James's, like, ego defense mechanism. Pyramid Head will kill monsters when they cross his path, but he's also attacking James. But the reason he's doing all of that is to stop James from continuing to look for Mary.
Oh, okay.
There's something Pyramid Head knows that James doesn't, and he wants to stop James before he learns something that will destroy his sense of himself.
Ooh.
The first time we see Pyramid Head is spooky as fuck. He's like on the other side of this metal grate, and he's just standing there in this dark hallway, and he's like glowing slightly red, and he's just looking at you, but he's not doing anything, and it is so ominous. So you explore the apartment building some more until you find your next human character, Eddie. And when you find Eddie, he is puking his ever-loving face off in a toilet, and in the next room, the body of a man is poorly stuffed into a refrigerator. So the first thing out of Eddie's mouth, besides vomit, is, "I didn't do it," which he did.
He did it.
He did. Also, the body in the fridge looks suspiciously like James.
What the heck?
In fact, several of the bodies you've seen lying around are wearing the same outfit as James is. Almost like other iterations of him have been here before. And it hasn't gone well.
Something hinky's going on here.
Yeah. It's kind of like what we were talking about with it's looping, you know? The time is on repeat. So Eddie is a big boy. And Eddie has been bullied pretty mercilessly for that. So Eddie, in retaliation, shoots and kills the dog of one of his bullies.
Oh.
Bully comes after Eddie. Eddie shoots him in the knee and runs away, only to find himself in Silent Hill. So like, that's how Eddie got there. Eddie is racked with guilt over what he did to the dog. But it turns out Eddie really likes killing people.
Oh.
Especially James. See, James is not kind about Eddie's weight either.
Oh.
He makes some snide comments to him that, in Eddie's mind, put him in the same category as the people that were bullying him, the people that whose dog he killed, whose people he shot in the knee. It's almost like shooting his bully like awakened a serial killer in Eddie, but before he could wreak that havoc on the real world, he found himself trapped in Silent Hill.
Oh.
But right now, like at this moment in the game, we don't know any of that. I'm filling in some of the details.
Oh, okay.
About him. We just have this weird interaction where he's puking and then we go our separate ways.
Like,
Goodbye. Okay. Same. So before I continue with this summary, I have a bone to pick with Eddie's character. And I've gone back and forth on whether or not I should bring this up, because I truly think this game is almost perfect, except for Eddie. But ultimately, this is our podcast, and I'm allowed.
Do what I want.
I can grind as many axes here as I want to. So, the way that this game handles Eddie's fatness really pisses me the fuck off. So, like, just for our listeners at home, I am currently, like, medically overweight. I'm about average for America, but I was obese for most of my life. So, like, I love fat people. I love fat representation. I am for the liberation of my people. I want more games to have fat characters. Don't hear me say the opposite of that. I want there to be more fat representation in games, but I also want it to be good representation. So, like, when that character is treated like a caricature, it does more harm than good, in my opinion. Eddie was bullied for being fat, and it made him a murderer. But then, like, the things we see him doing in the game, like, there's one scene where we see him just, like, eating a giant tub of ice cream with his hands. Like, he eats a whole extra large pizza by himself. Just, like, stuff that is, like, not... Yeah, you see...
Yeah, oh my god.
Like, he just mindlessly shovels food into his face like he's an animal.
When did this remake come out?
24.
Oh.
2 years ago.
Oh.
I know, that's what I mean. Like, maybe the message is supposed to be that bullying is bad, but then the game bullies him for being fat.
Right. It's like, oh, look at this fat dude over here who eats a bunch. Like, okay.
It would be one... And they kind of, I guess, in a later boss battle, like, subconsciously break some stereotypes, because, like, Eddie is fucking quick on his feet. He's a fast motherfucker. But, I don't know.
Still.
I just really don't like how they handle his character. Fat people deserve good representation. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't have to settle for being villains or stupid or unfuckable or lazy or, like, all the shitty ways that fat people are constantly characterized in media.
Agreed.
Axe grinding over.
Okay.
So not long after this encounter, you have another encounter with Pyramid Head. Basically, James hides in a closet while Pyramid Head violently sexually assaults one of the mannequins.
Aw, man!
Pyramid Head is not a good guy.
I
like,
know.
I don't know why you would have thought from anything, from the character design. Like, there's no indication that Pyramid is...
Listen.
I'm listening.
It just, you know, like, being, like, creepy and ominous, that's, like, whatever. Like, obviously. But, like, it's different when he does something like that, you know?
I'm glad you think so, Paige. It's more... So, in the remake, the sexual assault is more implied. It is outright shown in the original. Like, it is pretty explicit.
Oh, my God.
In the original. So then, like, after he's done doing what he's doing to that mannequin, Pyramid Head finds James hiding in the closet. James shoots him a bunch. Pyramid Head does not even flinch. Then he just walks away, dragging the dead mannequin behind him.
All right.
Yep. Now, remember I said that Pyramid Head kind of is James?
Yeah.
So he wants to kill the monsters, but he also wants to fuck the monsters. So, yeah. Like, there's lots of sex, violence, guilt overlapping in James's fucked up little noggin.
I think this man maybe needs some help.
At the very least, he could use a Prozac.
Yeah. If I love else. Prozac.
So right after this, hey.
I'd be a whole lot worse off if it wasn't for Prozac.
Well, share some with James, you fucking hoarding bitch.
Listen, I didn't know James needed any. Well, if he would just tell me.
If he would ask for help, right? That's the first step. Gotta admit you have a problem. So right after this, there's this transition scene. Like, basically, there's two halves of every location. There's layer one, which is bad.
Okay.
And then you kind of go back through the same place, but now it's way worse, and it looks worse, and the monsters are slightly different in a way that makes them worse. It's like you've descended into a lower layer of hell, basically. And then whenever you beat a location, you emerge back into Silent Hill proper, and it's, like, back to layer one.
Okay.
Have you seen any of the Silent Hill movies?
No.
So they kind of depict this in the movies where, like, there's this, like, air raid siren, and then there's, like, this, like, transition scene where, like, paint chips fly up off the walls, and, like, they show the transition, and it looks... Honestly, that's, like, one of the few things that the old Silent Hill movies did well.
Should I watch the Silent Hill movies?
So, the older ones, like, early 2000s, they are... about Silent Hill, the game Silent Hill 1 and 3.
Okay.
The one that's an adaptation of Silent Hill 1 is a decent horror movie. Like, it's fine.
Okay.
Do not ever fucking watch the adaptation of Silent Hill 2 that just came out a few months ago. Don't fucking do it. Nobody do it.
Why?
We'll get in. Well, I guess we'll get into it later, but I not right now.
I'm going to do it just to make you mad.
No, it's not. It's like, I can't even be called an adaptation of the game in my, like, it gets so many of the important things wrong that it's, like, basically not even the same story anymore. It's egregious. It gets it wrong in a way that is, like, offensive and insulting to what the game was originally supposed to be about.
I see.
We can talk about it more once you know what the story's about.
All right.
You're being premature. You're jerking me off, and I'm not ready to come yet.
Oh, my God.
I'm not ready. I need more foreplay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Where was I? Where the fuck was I, Paige?
I don't know.
We're in layer two now. It's worse. It was bad. Now it's worse.
It's all worse. Everything's worse.
So now in layer two, the lying figures, they don't just puke on you. Now they explode violently right when they're about to die.
Ew.
It really hurts if you're standing too close to them. And it's also in layer two that we run back into Angela, the woman we met in the graveyard at the very beginning,
Yeah.
who's looking for her mom. She is lying on the floor in front of a mirror the size of an entire wall.
Okay.
It's really visually neat. And she's holding a bloody knife. James thinks she's thinking of harming herself, so he tries to talk her out of it. She says basically, like, death is all everyone stuck in Silent Hill deserves. James is like, no, bro. I'm nothing like you. James changes the subject to asking if she's found her mom yet. Ask her, hey, did your mom live in Silent Hill? Angela freaks out and is like, how do you know that about my mom? And James
He's
is like,
I was just asking a question.
He's like, chill, you're here looking for your mom. I assumed that she was here because you're looking for her here. Angela calms down. James offers to accompany Angela, offers, like, to join forces with her, help watch her back, you know. She says no, but asks him to take the knife so she won't hurt herself with it. But as he reaches for it, she freaks out again, points it at him, and tells him to stay away. Then she starts crying, says that she's been bad, drops the knife, and runs away.
Did she kill her mom?
No.
She, like, like, that sounds like she killed her mom.
No, there is no... Her mom never actually shows up.
Oh.
We get slight indications later on about what's up with her mom, but, like, no. Nope. And I don't want to say more right now about what the fuck all that was about.
Say more right now.
No, because, so there is a scene coming up that will make Angela's character make a lot more sense in a heartbreaking way. But for now, just, like...
Can't wait.
Angela is batshit, but it's not her fault.
All right.
But she thinks it's her fault.
Okay.
So that's all you need to know about Angela right now.
Cool.
So after this, you finish solving another long form puzzle involving like finding the hands on a clock, and then you solve a riddle to figure out where the hands should be pointing, and it opens, you know, all these doors. And the last door leads you straight to Pyramid Head again. Pew, 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 pew.
Hold on, hold on, hold on.
So this battle ensues. Pyramid Head is chasing you with his big fuck you sword. The thing is, you can't kill Pyramid Head, and the battle will end on its own eventually. Pyramid Head will hear a siren, stop attacking you, and just leave. So you can, if you know that that's what's happening, you can just like avoid him and dodge and run away. If you shoot him, like the more damage you do, the sooner the siren sounds. But like,
Okay.
I didn't know that I couldn't, I didn't know that that's how it would end. So like, I kind of wasted like fuck ton of ammo on Pyramid Head because I didn't know how it worked. Fuck me, I guess.
Well,
That's all
I mean,
right.
that's what he's doing to everyone else, so.
I guess like people like some people read guides before they play games or before bosses. So like the people who know that's how it is just ran away and saved all their
Gotcha.
stuff. But I didn't know. I didn't know.
It's okay. I forgive you.
So anyway, Pyramid Head busts through this heavy metal door. You follow him out, and you're back into downtown Silent Hill. You made it out of the apartments. Outside the apartments, you run into Laura, the asshole kid, again. James confronts her for being an asshole, which honestly seems a little beneath him because he's an adult and she's 8 years old. But to her credit, Laura shows no remorse whatsoever. None. So James then sees that Laura is holding a letter. And he's like, "Hey, kid, what you got there?" And Laura
We
gets
just
a.
got a letter. We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
It was just like that.
Steve Burns came out and everything.
Is he out? What? Oh my God, I thought you were telling me. I thought you were telling me that he's gay, and I was so excited for a second. Why would you take that away from me? Why would you do
It
that?
to
No,
yourself.
you did. You can't just say so and so came out in the year of our Lord 2026. You could say he
Like,
jumped out, he
came
popped
out
out.
of nowhere,
Okay, that's
popped out
better.
of the bushes.
So anyway, James points out this letter. Laura gets up and like starts to run away. As soon as he mentions the letter, she's like, gotta get out of here. She says, "It's none of your business. You didn't love Mary anyway."
Damn.
How does she know that? How, what? 8-year-old what? Much, much more to be revealed. Right after this, James, having no idea what to make of that, wanders into Rosewater Park where he meets Maria.
Oh.
And Maria looks just like Mary and sounds just like Mary and almost has the same name as Mary. She just dresses and talks and acts way sexier than Mary did. Maria is Silent Hill's most direct attempt at fucking with James. Because Maria is everything James wished that his wife had been. Maria is James' fantasy version of Mary. And she has been created by Silent Hill to add to his torture. We'll talk more about sort of the interactions with Maria as we go, especially as we get into the endings. But a lot of the way the games end has to do with like, does James choose to go off with Maria and like fully dive into his fantasy world? Does he choose reality over Maria? I'm getting ahead of myself now, but like,
Maria is important.
Maria is super important. And like, Maria is a real entire person who was spawned into existence by Silent Hill because of the fantasies in James' mind. So like, she just has to deal with the fact that like he is fucked and Silent Hill wants to fuck with him. And like she is an entire person who can have every range of emotion and feeling and
Wow.
experience who is just in the middle of it.
Damn.
Yeah, it sucks. Pour one out for Maria. Sucks to be Maria.
Justice for Maria.
I, yes. Hashtag free Maria.
I was gonna say
So James meets Maria at Rosewater Park. And at first he thinks it's Mary, obviously.
Right.
Figures out pretty quickly that it isn't, but he is like deeply unsettled by Maria. She tries to touch him, and he like panics in the way that turned on 12-year-old boys panic when a girl brushes their elbow. You know what I mean? Anyway, the two of them get onto the subject of Mary. He says, "Yeah, hey, I'm gonna go look for my dead wife." Maria's like, "That's weird, but okay, I guess I'll come with you." He tries to tell her not to. And she's like, "You're not leaving me alone with all of these monsters." Even though like he found her alone and she seemed just fine, and the monsters are like after him, so like being with him isn't gonna make her
Right, like that's probably gonna make things
save
worse for
her.
you, actually.
So then, kind of out of nowhere, Maria's like, "So like, did you love your wife?" And he says nothing. And she asks him again, and he changes the subject quickly.
Let's change the
Yeah,
subject.
he's like, "You know what? Yeah, sure, you can come with me, if for no other reason than to stop talking about if he loved Mary." He's like, "Yeah, sure, come with me. Fine."
I'm gonna try to put in as many John Mulaney references as I possibly can. I've already gotten like three of them.
I missed every single one.
That's okay.
To be fair, later James does tell Maria, like, "You know, I did love Mary, but it just like it sounds kind of forced and defensive when he does say it, and he seems really uncomfortable with like the direct question," which like I don't know. No one, I don't know that anyone has asked me in like a long time if I love Game Boy, but like it wouldn't be a hard question to answer.
Right.
Like, yep,
Like,
I sure
maybe.
do.
I guess so.
So, anyway,
If push comes to
I
shove.
guess I could.
That's fine.
So, anyway, Maria is like, "I have an idea. I know where Mary might be." So she leads James to a strip club called Heaven's Night,
Hell yeah.
the key for which she is hiding in her cleavage
Woohoo!
because Maria is thirsty. She hits the lights, she
Very
grabs a
nice.
pole, and she's like, "Do you want me to put on a show?" And James is like, "Are you fucking serious right now? Like, this is the place you think my wife is waiting for me?" And Maria says, No, I'm messing with you. This was a joke. We're on the way there. We had to cut through the building anyway." James loses his temper because Maria's wasting his time and he's trying to find his wife.
Right.
Maria starts to cry and is like, "I was just trying to lighten the goddamn mood." James apologizes,
Maria, baby girl.
sits down at the bar, talks with Maria for a while. She pours him a drink. He won't take it. So there's a cutscene. He won't take the drink. You can go back and pick up the drink and like extend the cutscene. I didn't choose
Oh,
to do that, but
interesting.
like there are things you can do to kind of influence the direction that the endings take.
Gotcha.
And that's as much as I'll say on that for now. But eventually James is like, "You know, this has been nice, but I really gotta find my dead wife. You know what I mean? I gotta go." So they move along to the real location Maria meant, which is a garden with a statue of a woman at the center. And the statue is of a woman from a local legend who was cast out from the town and lived alone on the other side of the lake. A man falls in love with her, rows across every night to be with her, and she would guide him with a lit candle from the shore. One night there's a storm. Candle blows out. Man tries to row to her in the dark anyway. He dies in the storm, but she doesn't know that. She has no way of getting any information. So every night, this woman still goes out with her candle, never losing hope that someday he'll come back to her. This is a heavy-handed metaphor for what's going on with James and Mary.
Right.
But it's like a
But that's
bittersweet
so
little,
sad.
yeah, it sure is. But alas, Mary isn't in the garden, so they have to move along.
Maria.
What about Maria?
She just
Oh, I mean, it wasn't a bad idea. Like, it's a nice little romantic garden. The strip club was a stupid joke, but. So they're moving along. They're walking down the road. They hear screaming coming from inside a movie theater. So you go in and explore. You find Eddie and Laura hanging out because they're buddies. Apparently,
Eddie and the 8-year-old girl?
They're just chilling.
Great.
They're
fantastic.
Just hanging out. Not a lot of note happens here, except for some reason, Eddie's breath is visible, like he is in a very cold place, but no one else's is.
Huh.
Anyway, Laura runs away from you, and you and Maria decide you're going to try and catch her, because a little girl is not safe on her own out here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Except, none of the monsters ever bother Laura. And it's unclear if Laura and the monsters can even see or interact with each other. Or if Laura is just a regular surface world resident of Silent Hill who can interact with the people trapped in the hell world for reasons.
Huh.
But, like, Laura, there are a few times where James is like, it's not safe. Like, I gotta protect you. And she's like, protect me from what? What are you talking about? Like, she doesn't seem able to see the monsters. So.
Interesting. Okay.
But James and Maria, at this point, they don't know that. They're trying to look out for a kid, even though she's a piece of shit. So, they follow Laura to the hospital.
There's a horse loose in the hospital.
Is this another John Mulaney quote?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's... I'm glad you're having fun.
John Mulaney is like a hyperfixation for me.
Well, this game is a hyperfixation for me, so
right,
I guess
perfect.
It's fair. It's fair.
Cool, cool.
So they follow Laura into the hospital where they run into her doodling on the wall of a stairwell. She's drawing a cute little bunny that is about to be attacked by a big bad wolf.
Oh.
But she bolts again, so they gotta keep looking for her. The two of you, you and Maria, get a generator going and take an elevator to the top floor of the hospital where Maria suddenly feels very unwell.
Uh-oh.
She goes into a hospital room and lays down on the bed, telling James that she needs to rest for a while. Right across the hallway from that room is a poster for the hospital's top-rated palliative care team, or hospice.
Mm-hmm.
It's at this point that iPixel will let you page in on a little bit more information about Mary. Information mm-hmm. that you might have figured out from the symbolism behind the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that Mary was sick for a long time before she died.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly how long, more on that later, but long enough that she, as a young woman, was in hospice.
Okay.
This hospice. In fact, the very room that Maria has chosen to lie down in
is Mary's
was
room.
Mary's hospital room.
Okay.
And James does not seem able to remember that, or willing to allow himself to remember that, at the very least. What else may James be willfully forgetting? What else is Silent Hill trying to force him to confront by creating Maria? We're going to fucking find out eventually.
Great.
Right after James leaves Maria to rest, he runs into his next enemy type, the nurses. Have you seen the Silent Hill 2 nurses?
No.
Really? So you've seen... Okay. Okay. Besides Pyramid Head, they are definitely the most well-known Silent Hill monster.
I wonder if maybe I have seen them.
You
and I
probably
just haven't
have.
Realized. I'm going to look them up.
I'm going to describe them for the people listening at home. For the uninitiated out there, the nurses, they're dressed like nurses, obviously.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You've seen them, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But they're not dressed in, like, an official way. They're dressed more like the sexy nurse costume that you can buy at Lover's Lane kind of way. Short skirts. High heels. They walk in a way that's like all like zigzaggy and broken, like their legs aren't put together right. The layer one ones have like pipes. The layer two ones have like swords. They're tough. But see, they also, there's no gentle way to put this. They have condoms stretched over their heads.
Is that what those are?
And if you shoot them in the head, it's not blood that comes out.
Is it semen?
It's a white substance.
Great.
Probably come. So with these nurses, we get the clearest picture of just what exactly is eating at James. These monsters represent the fact that he, for a period of years, watched his wife slowly die. His wife, who was either too sick to fuck or sick in a gross way that made him not want to fuck her, or both. He remained faithful to her, but he was like super backed up and horny. Probably for the nurses that took care of her and that he saw every single day, all day. And he feels extreme guilt for that selfish sexual impulse. Yep. James is big mad at his own penis, and it haunts him. That extreme sexual guilt has bled into every single one of his monsters, even now that his wife is gone and he can theoretically be doing what he wants with who he
Right.
wants. The guilt just will not go, though. So you kill some sexy nurses, you keep looking for Laura, you finally find her in the locked psych ward of the hospital. It's got rubber rooms, the whole nine, which, brief aside, someone please just give me like half an hour in a straitjacket in a rubber room. I think I could have a really good time just like throwing myself against the
I
walls. I
know.
feel like it would be good for me. I feel like I could get some things that are inside of me outside of me with just like a rubber room for like a few minutes. Someone, if
Okay.
anybody out there has access to a rubber room and is willing, I'll pay. I'll kiss you on the face. I'll do whatever you want me to do.
Ma'am.
So anyway, James finds Laura and he's like, "Listen, kid, why do you keep running away from me? And how do you know Mary?" And Laura says that she met Mary in the hospital because they were both patients there last year. Now remember, James has been telling everybody that Mary's been dead for 3 years. So immediately when she says this, James freaks out, yells at her, calls her a liar. She starts to run away again. He catches up to her, apologizes, convinces her to stay with him, even though there's no indication that Laura is in danger anyway. So Laura says, "Yeah, sure, I'll stay with you if you help me retrieve a letter that Mary gave me that I hid somewhere in the hospital." She leads James to this big open room, says, "Yeah, I hid it over there behind that pipe." And as soon as James is outside of arm length, she slams the door shut and locks James in,
What a little
calls him a
shit.
fart face, and runs away.
Beautiful, masterful, no notes, 10
Such
out
an
of 10.
She's an asshole, but the fact that James fell for that is like
Right, like, come
grossess.
on, dude.
I saw that coming.
It's over there.
Way the fuck
I'm not
over
gonna
there,
go
yeah.
over there myself. You should go and get it, and I'll just stand right here by the door. Dude.
Now, James has now been shut inside a big open space. And anyone familiar with survival horror games or video games in general, really, will know that being in a big open space spells danger because that's a boss battle arena, baby.
Heck yeah.
Meet Flesh Lips.
Ma'am.
I didn't name the monster. The monster is called Flesh Lips. It's a monster that looks like a woman caged in a hospital bed. It's got rotting, dangling legs and a big, horrible mouth. We're like, so like it's between its knees, but I feel like the vagina connection is intentional, especially in this game. Especially because the monster is called Flesh Lips. So the vagina mouth screams really loud. Flesh Lips swings from the ceiling at first, but then later it like sprouts metal legs like a spider. And again, we have a manifestation of Mary's illness. And the fact that, like, the thought of having sex with her in her sick state is monstrous to James. He is repulsed by her and he feels horrible about it because that's his wife. So, anyway, you beat the boss. Are you looking at pictures?
I am, and I don't even understand.
Yeah. Yep. When you leave the boss arena, you're in layer two of the hospital, so things are worse. Things are always worse.
Everything's worse.
So, you keep doing your thing, you keep killing monsters and finding keys and solving puzzles, and eventually Maria comes and finds you and is like, "What the fuck? You just left me in that hospital room. Do you know what I've been through trying to find you?" She says, this bit, she literally says, "All you care about is your dead wife. You're supposed to be taking care of me."
Bitch.
See, that was my initial reaction. My initial reaction was like, "Excuse me. Bitch, excuse me. First of all, you decided to go take a nap in the middle of the murder hospital. Second of all, yes, I'm here for my dead wife. That's the whole fucking point of the game." But then I thought about it and I tried to see it from Maria's perspective. Because, like, she only exists
Yeah.
because of James. He brought her into being, he is her creator. And he seems perfectly willing to abandon her in pursuit of a dead person. She is alive. Mary is not. And he keeps choosing Mary over her. He is her only hope to ever get out of there. She needs him, and he doesn't really care about her at all. So anyway, you and Maria back together again. And you are about to leave the hospital through this like sub super underground basement. I don't know. You go down like way too many stairs and you wind up in this tunnel where who should appear but Pyramid Head. Pyramid Head chases you and Maria to this elevator, and you're almost there when Maria trips and falls.
Oh my God, Maria, would you get it together, lady?
And James just keeps going.
Oh,
doesn't help her up, doesn't go back for her, nothing.
Honestly, though, same.
Yeah, he's not super chivalrous, but I get, yeah. James gets to the elevator. He's, like, holding the door open, like, a foot, like, as wide as his head. And he's like, hurry up, get up, come on, get up. But that doesn't help for some reason. Maria just makes it to the doors when she is stabbed through her torso from behind by Pyramid Head.
Oh, dang.
James lets the elevator doors close, rides up to safety. So James is out of the hospital alone. I want to pause here real quick just to mention something that's been hinted at in the background of the game. And that's that there seem to be some people who live in surface Silent Hill, like in the real world. Because kind of like I mentioned in the Silent Hill F intro, Silent Hill is also a real tourist town. It's a coastal town in Maine. Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's where Mary and James lived before he fell into hell, Silent Hill. That's where she was hospitalized. Like,
right. Yeah.
It's a real place.
Yeah.
There are hints in notes, graffiti, etc. that some people in real world Silent Hill can see into and have interactions with hell, Silent Hill.
Okay.
Laura may or may not be an example of this, but there are notes about patients in the hospital that seem to be able to see and are bothered by James. But because their doctors can't see him, these people are in the locked psych ward that I told you about.
Oh my God.
There's another note from in the apartment earlier where a woman keeps complaining about hearing gunshots from neighboring apartments. And the superintendent is like, there's no gunshots. What are you talking about? So it seems like she is hearing James fighting the monsters in another layer of reality.
Wow.
I don't know. I just think that's a really cool, like, haunting little detail that's, like,
that is cool.
Woven throughout the game. But yeah, my theory is that Laura is the most explicit instance of this happening. It seems that Laura is living in the real world and doesn't see any monsters or anything, but can interact with the humans that are trapped in Silent Hill. There also have been hints along the way that not every person stuck in hell, Silent Hill, is experiencing the same hell. Like I mentioned, Eddie's breath is visible, but no one else's is. And this little town interlude, James runs into Angela again, and they're having this conversation about how she thinks her mom isn't in Silent Hill anymore, and even if she were, she wouldn't want to see her. And James is like, oh, no, don't say that. That's awful. And then, like, Angela gets this horrified look on her face, and she's looking, like, over James's right shoulder.
Mm-mm.
And just like, ah, you shouldn't be here, and then runs away. But James can't see
anything. Yeah.
So, like, she is having an experience of her own hell that James can't quite fully engage with. But later, he will see who she was looking at. Spoiler alert, it's her dad, and he sucks.
Great.
We'll get there. But yeah, those differences will become more and more prominent. Like, between hells, between each hell and the surface world, the boundaries are porous. Like, reality is a slippery fish indeed in this game. So anyway, we're back out in the town. It is rough out here now. Like, before it was foggy, but the sun was out. Now it is dark, and it is raining, and the monsters that were previously just in layer two of the buildings are all over town. The notes are getting more hostile and aggressive. They're telling James to kill himself if he wants to see Mary so bad. Oh. They're telling him he's not man enough to confront the truth. But you are man enough, goddammit. So,
yeah.
You go through the Historical Society, down another impossibly long flight of creepy underground dungeon stairs and into the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And who should you run into there but Eddie?
Oh, dang, I thought it was going to be Pyramid Head again.
No, he'll be back, but not for a little while.
Eddie does not get rap horns, I'm sorry.
No. Eddie seems to have just murdered some rando non-monster for making fun of him. James is like, my good dude, you can't do that. And Eddie points his gun at him and says, ah, I'm just joking. Like, he points his gun and they put it away. Ah, and then he says, that guy was dead when I got here, which is the same thing he said in the apartment. It was not true either time. Eddie is like full-blown serial killer now, and it is only a matter of time before he will be a problem for James.
Great.
But for now, James de-escalates things. They go their separate ways. But it's interesting to note that whereas before, only Eddie's breath was visible, now James's breath is visible when he's close to Eddie.
Oh. Hmm.
So it's like the cold is spilling over.
Okay.
So you work your way through the prison. You solve more puzzles. You kill more monsters. And then, in a random hallway deep in the underbelly of layer 2 of the prison, which doesn't look like a prison anymore, it looks like an apartment building.
What?
And in this hallway, you find a blood-soaked newspaper lying on the floor.
Oh, no.
And this newspaper contains an article about a man named Thomas Orozco, who has been violently murdered, stabbed to death in the neck and chest, to be specific. Angela's last name is Orozco.
Oh, so she killed her dad.
This is an article about the murder of her father. A little bit further down the hall, you can hear Angela crying from inside one of the apartments. Daddy, no. Daddy, stop. James seems to have stumbled into Angela's old apartment as well as her personal hell. And the big boss monster of Angela's version of Silent Hill is a monster known as the Abstract Daddy. And that's where we will pick back up next week. But for now.
Read hard.
Play hard.
And fuck trauma.
Later, skaters. It.